What's up, everybody? This is PTD Thursday, April 17th. I got Joker, Freak, and Decane on the show today, leading right into the big hot weekend of the NDL. Joker, how are you doing today?
Doing good. Happy to be on here. Keep taking it Friday, like you were mentioning, but good to be here.
What about you, Freak? How are you enjoying your day out on lunch right now?
No, I'm feeling great. Today's my Friday. No work tomorrow. I'm excited.
DK, and you're just trying to not feel the heat of losing the Georgia Bulldogs, eh?
You know what? Look, he's been on my back since season 29. It ain't going to let up. Keep it coming. We staying here.
That's got to be one of those expectations, though, that you kind of know, taking, you know, one of the better rated teams and playing in one of the toughest conferences. Is that there's always going to be that little target on your back.
Yeah, it is. And that's why for me, you know, the biggest thing or my biggest thing for me is just dynasty and the team, like being able to keep them. Because at the end of the day, like I said, you're going to have people who switch hats with championships. You're going to have people who switch hats in the CFP. But to be able to grab a big dog and keep them for, you know, a certain duration. Because I think the longest dynasty with Georgia is 7 seasons. So I'm trying to see if I can beat that. That's my goal.
Well, that's a pretty good goal there. We'll jump right into the PTD here. The first topic, well, this will be for Joker. Go ahead first. With the spring transfer portal coming up, what are your thoughts about the spring transfer portal? Maybe your thoughts of the holdout for the opting new contract, maybe like Nico just did at Tennessee. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, great question for me, right, since I'm a Tennessee guy. You know, obviously, it sucks to see Nico go, but I think the reality of it is when you look at the spring portal, you know, not a lot of big names are moving. It's spring ball's here, especially someone like that. It's kind of crazy to see him holding out. And I'm actually kind of, you know, it's unfortunate to see him go backwards in the direction that he's going, but, you know, making $2 million, playing in front of 100,000 plus. Now it looks like he's going to be going to UCLA probably for, you know, considerably less and playing in front of 10,000 people. Definitely is a good thing that he didn't pan out or the holdout didn't work for him for college football in general. I think, you know, it's just not good for these kids to be jumping around. I think a little bit of adversity. And I think that's what spring portal's about, right? You realize you're not going to be making the starting position. And then they bounce looking for a better place. And I think in life, you just got to battle with adversity a little bit and stick it out sometimes. But one of the things I do appreciate about the spring portal, SEC has a rule in place that doesn't allow these kids to jump from school to school within the SEC. And I think that's something that maybe should be implemented around and college football in general. You look at some type of, you know, you got to sit the first 4 games if you jump ship or whatnot. So that there's a little bit of, you know, people being held accountable and staying with their team. So that's kind of what I was thinking. But, you know, I'll pass it to Freak. Let him share what he's got.
No, I like everything you said about the portal and the changes. I really think the spring portal is a little on the bad side of it, because you have the winter portal. If anything, Nico should have happened to hold out when the winter portal started instead of waiting until the spring portal. But either way, I respect what your coach did. No one is above the team. I wonder how Saban would have taken that if, you know, when he was coaching. I know he had a few times where he had the portal, but it just makes it very interesting to see how these players think. Yes, you can make more money going elsewhere. At the same time, you can also lose money by holding out and leaving. But you made a lot of good points, Joker. DK?
All right. Well, There's many different ways you look at this. One, you can look at it as this is preparing these kids for what they're going to be facing when they, if they reach that next level. But is preparation really that big of a deal? I mean, are we really trying to, you know, do that at this early of a stage? Because at the end of the day, for me, spring portal is the worst one of them all, because by the time the spring game or spring term comes around, you have teams that are trying to get the cohesiveness of their teams together. They're trying to build that morale. They're trying to build that camaraderie so that going into the start of the school year, they have things going. They have guys who are together, who know the system, who have an engine and a machine that's well-oiled and ready to go. And when you have some players sitting out or holding out and, you know, trying to make these changes, that kind of puts a little bit of a damper or a hold in that. I mean, let's say you do hold off, and then eventually you decide to stay with that school. Like, what type of morale or what type of, you know, chemistry are you going to have in that locker room? You know, those are the type of things that I look at when it comes to that spring portal. I personally don't like it. I do like that the portal has been implemented. And like Joker was talking about, like back in the day, if a kid transferred, you know, he had to sit out a whole year, a whole season before they could actually suit up. So, yeah, and I do believe the SEC does have it going in the right direction. If you want to jump ship within the conference, then, yeah, there should be some type of a penalty. You shouldn't just be able to just, you know, go full blast right off the jump. So, yeah, I do think other conferences should look at implementing something like that, because they might actually, you know, change some people's minds about, you know, what they want to do or where they might be going. So, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I want to just jump back in and say that, you know, I think one of the things that the spring portal does do is it makes it really hard on these coaches, right? You go out, you're practicing in spring, you're prepping your team, you're trying to get everybody, as D. Kane was, as cohesive, playing together as a team, and in the back of your mind, you've got, you know, who's going to hit the portal today? You know, who am I going to piss off that's not going to like me coaching them hard? And, you know, the reality is sometimes you got to be able to be coached hard, and I think these kids today, coaching kids hard, and as well as the Nico incident, it's you know, I know there's some basketball coaches in here. I know there's coaches throughout that do football as well, but the parents have really affected the game. And he's a great example on Prime Stage, where his dad has really gotten in the way, made a big issue. Now he's in the portal, making less money, playing in front of 10,000 people, most likely at UCLA. I mean, things have gone drastically backwards for him. And granted, at some point, he's a man. He needs to step up and say, hey, this is what I want to do. And you know, it's a sticky situation. But I really feel bad for the coaches right now. The coaches, there is no loyalty. And you know, full circle, there's never been loyalty for the coaches either, right? They could jump ship whenever they wanted. So kind of going against them.
Exactly. I have two things to add with that. One is I remember Matt Rhule had mentioned the reason why they canceled Nebraska's spring game was because he was afraid of his players getting taken in the portal in case they decided to enter. Number two, in regards to Nico, say if he doesn't find another school, does he rescind his scholarship completely?
Yeah, I'm not taking it. Tennessee, I'm not taking him back. You can pound sand. You made your choice.
Do you think that some of the transfers that are taking place, I mean, obviously we saw the transfers in the fall and stuff, but do you think some of the transfers that are taking place are because some of these players who are inside of, let's say, a QB room, and they see these new transfers coming in, these younger freshmen, do you think that some of that pressure applied may affect their, obviously they see the inner stuff that a lot of coaches and players don't talk about, that stuff kind of stays private. Do you think that they start feeling the heat and the pressure, and instead of competing for that starting job, they just transfer out to another school that's offering money plus a starting job?
I believe that. Yeah, take a look at Alex Orji from Michigan. He ended up saying congratulations to Underwood for making the signing to Michigan, and then once the portal opened, oh, I'm leaving to UNLV. So I could definitely see the heat adding up to him.
And then obviously Joker brought it up. I mean, I think another portion of the transfer portals, you're going to start seeing more and more people being influenced by who they surround themselves with. Mm-hmm. family, friends, cousins, relatives, people that are, that don't maybe necessarily have your best interests, you know, forward. But
yeah, of course. I mean, you got those people who are looking at those high dollars that they can start taking a part of before you even get into the NFL, if you even get into the NFL. And that's where, you know, that influence and that guidance, and it comes into play. And when you come from, you know, certain backgrounds, it's hard. It really is, because you yourself have never been put into a position where your decisions were your decisions, or solely for your own benefit. Sometimes you were doing it because of your family. So for some people, that does play a part. But going back to what you guys were talking about with the guys feeling that pressure, I'm going to be honest. If you're coming to my school and you want to come to my school because you feel as though you can't hack it where you're at, why would I really want you to be there? I mean, that's the way I'm like, me as a coach, I'm going to be looking at those smaller intangibles too. It's like, I could see if you were coming because of the program, because of the culture that we have, that it may fit better for you, but you were just afraid of losing your job or not having a job because of somebody else coming in. I don't like your work ethic already. I don't need a fear monger in my locker room who's going to be sitting there, you know, not performing 100% because they got too much worried on their shoulders. You should use that as motivation, not as a scare tactic. I mean, that's just me. But
Nick Saban was definitely on to something when he left college football. There's a reason why he left, and I think a large part of it is the transfer portal. We'll move on to the next topic.
I agree.
We'll move on to the next topic. Freak here. Big topic at the Indio right now has been coaching reports. We have a lot of new members in the league, and I think they're starting to see the effect of these coaching reports. What are your thoughts on receiving feedback during the season? Obviously, that's new. A lot of times coaching report feedback wasn't given until the end of the season. You know, should owners take a day or two prior to rating their fellow coach, like a cool off period before you actually go in there? And should the coach be have to supply any type of evidence to combat their negative feedback of the game?
I mean, coaching reports are very important. We're graded on them. We have to rate our fellow coaches on each game. I think, you know, my thoughts during the season, it's honestly a great opinion. Or sorry, it's a great thought that the commissioners actually reach out to you to let you know, hey, look, just so you know, you received a negative feedback in regards to this. You know, I just want to reach out to see what's going on. This is what you can do better to avoid it. So you do have to take any feedback you get as constructive criticism. At the same time, I also think that owners should reach, or the coach should reach out to the other coach and tell them what they saw wrong with the gameplay. Try to talk with them, see the reason why that owner, you know, felt as why they did it, or, you know, hey, look, this guy ran 5 drags in a row. What's going on? You know, why did he hit the drag route instead of the seam route? Well, you know what? The linebacker bailed. No one was playing man against him. Or, you know, hey, he ran 5 stretches within a specific amount of time. Why are you not running an inside run? So, you know, there's a lot of different things that can go about it. We definitely want to mix up our plays, and I also think that the coaches should take maybe a day or two, if needed, when rating their coach. Take a look at the gameplay. If you have YouTube, your video is there forever. If you have Twitch, make sure you archive it. It's there for 7 days. You can go back, rewatch the game, see what you saw, see if it still matches the same thing. And lastly, I do think a coach should supply evidence to combat their negative feedback, but you know, it's up to the league if they want to do that or not. Decane?
All right. Well, you guys are talking to a guy who's been in the league where at one point at the end of the season, if your coaching report didn't cut it, you got to, hey, thank you for, thanks for playing, but maybe not next year kind of thing. So for us to be able to have that opportunity for the commissioners to reach out during the season and for us to fine tune so that by the end of the season, we are getting all those fives, it's awesome. Like, you guys really have no idea how awesome it is. And just to touch on what Freak was saying, like, when it comes to feedback, we want to make sure that we are looking at the delivery of the feedback as well as how people are receiving that feedback. Because sometimes we'll look at, oh, well, you know, I tried to talk to so-and-so and, you know, I kind of got an attitude, or is it, okay, what was my part in that situation? How did I come to that person? You know, how did I present this information to them in a way that they may have responded the way that they responded? Was it my delivery, or was it their immaturity? I mean, we have to look at everything to make sure that everything is going the way it should so that we get the results that we are looking for. But being able to have, you know, some video clips. I look over the game. I go through the stream and I watch over the tape. I look at variations of formations. I look at variations on both sides of the ball. I'm looking at, if you do call a specific play, how many times in that game did you call that specific play? Was that really your go-to play? You know, it's just things like that, because it's not so I can be nitpicky, because even if I can have comments to leave you about things you can touch up on and still give you fours or fives, because I'm looking at, was your variation no variation at all? Like, were you running the same five plays? You know, were you sitting in the same defense all game? Did you run 100% of this all game? You know, I'm looking at that stuff. Did you literally break a rule? Or did you just get close enough? Because, I mean, that right there is going to determine what type of score I give you, but I'm going to give you the feedback, letting you know, hey, because my thing is, I may grade you a certain way, but another coach may not. So I want to give you that feedback just in case you can carry that with you, so that when you do play that other coach, you don't get dinged for the things I didn't ding you for, because those are things that they will ding you for. Joker?
Yeah, this one's been on my mind. You know, look, when I got invited to the league, I was asked, please don't be a cheeseball. And by the two people that wanted me in the league. So I take the coach's reports pretty serious. I'm pretty prideful when it comes to making sure I get fives there and communication. Good example is, I got a new team this year, and I played homie in a game, just you know, scrimmage. And I asked him after the game, I flat asked him, hey, how was I? What was the CR report on that? I'm going to quarterback and run a little bit and got out with some wheels and wanted to make sure it was fair. And he said, you know, fair game. I ought to give you fives all across the board. But it matters. And I think, you know, specifically when it comes to the coaches' reports, there's got to be a cool off board, because the reports are there to keep people honest from abusing the game, right? And taking advantage of AI or taking advantage of, you know, I think one of the things that me matters is if I run the football, whether it's dive right, dive left, inside zone, stretch right, stretch left, and you can't stop it, real life, you know, Nick Saban's not going to say, oh, I got to pass now. No, he's going to keep running the ball down your throat until you stop it. That's the reality of football. So to get a coach's report and you're coaching reporting people and giving them bad scores because you can't stop the run, that's different than somebody taking advantage of the game. And I think from coaches, we got to separate the difference. We got to say, hey, are they abusing the game, or are they just running something that you can't stop, whether it's inside zone, out of 14 different formations, whatnot. But if you're not adjusting your defense to be able to stop the run, then shame on you. Now, there's a difference. If I run play action 8 times in a row, yeah, that's cheese. And I think that's something that needs to be looked at. But from a consequence standpoint, I think that we've got so many rules in place for people that violate the rules. I think that commissioners should have the ability to go back and watch a game. And if an unfair coach's report is given, I think there should be a conversation had with said coach. And if the same thing happens, then a consequence. Because I don't think it's fair with coaches' reports mattering so much in this league. I don't think it's fair for people to get on someone because you know you're salty over an ass whooping.
Hey Joker, question for you. question for you. You had mentioned that you had asked homie on in regards to what he had saw. If you don't mind me asking, what have you seen in your coach reports past that may have caused a flag that shouldn't have been a flag?
For me, I've gotten my reports have gotten fives every single time, except for one coach. My first year gave me a four for calling timeouts when he took a knee. I was just confident. I wanted the ball back. I wanted to try to score and kick an onside kick and win the game. So, outside of that, it's been mainly fives. And like I said, it's pretty something serious to me because I was asked to make sure that I get fives on my coach's report. So,
okay,
that's what I do.
So just for some clarification for fact-checking, obviously being a commissioner in the NDL, is that is one of the things that the commissioners are tasked with as part of their job is to go through the – we can only see our conference foes. We can only see their coaching reports. We do reach out to them. We do reach out if there's no details written in there about why they left the score, or if it's very vague or it doesn't make sense. We do reach out to that owner. So example, if Freak – leaves Joker a bad coaching report, but doesn't leave a lot of detail or it doesn't make any sense. And we go back and we do, some of us do go back and watch the videos to see if we can see what they're trying to talk about. And if we don't see there's any issue, no league broke, and it's very vague and it's just you lost and you're salty and you're mad. We do tell that. We would tell Freak, hey, Freak, you need to change your coaching report or it doesn't count for you. That's what happens. And I know some coaches have already been reached out this season about that is, hey, you need to go back in and reevaluate your coaching report, because it looks to us like you're just pissed off you lost. And that happens. And I'll tell you what, that's happened every single season in the NDL forever. Is sometimes the coaching reports are just a place for guys to vent. And I think the cool off period, definitely solves that, but that's got to be self-police. You got to do that yourself. We can't put a bunch of more rules in place because some people can't handle their emotions. It's just, hey, don't get on your coaching report for 24 hours. A lot of times when you let it cool down, like Penguin said, you reach out to your opponent and stuff like that. The scores go from threes to fives because you've been able to talk. The person's making changes. For the most part, I think that a lot of that is all self-policed. But the coaching reports are there and they've been there forever. And I think they're just a testament to the NDL and the NDL way.
Hey, to add, we have how many days? 7 days to make a change to a coach report.
Yeah, once the game's
day played. Of the game.
Yep.
Okay.
So we'll move on to the next topic. There, this one will be for DK, and we're going to go Big Ten talk here. Is the new owner Tutty Roosevelt and the Northwestern Wildcats for real? He's 3-0, 93 points scored against 21, convincing wins over Stanford and Washington. And then who are your competitors in the Big Ten this year?
All right, so when I saw this, I actually had to take a look. Because, I mean, Northwestern 3-0, you know, yeah, it's kind of impressive. But when you deep dive into it, who has he played? He played Matt Daddy, okay? Matt Daddy's best season was season 29 at 7-6 with Wake Forest. Other than that, he's had two losing seasons. When he played Stanford, which was the only team to score 21 points on him, Stanford basically kind of beat themselves. They had a forced fumble that gave the ball up in decent field, and they had a interception, I do believe, returned for a touchdown. But Stanford had 418 yards of total offense, 22 first downs. It was just that picking that fumble that beat them. They pretty much beat Northwestern across the board, on offense and defense, other than those two things. So it's kind of like, is it really skill, or is it, you know, hey, you just kind of skim by on the hair, you know, hair of your teeth there. As his games come up, I mean, because honestly, with guys who have been proving themselves with Penn State, you have Oregon, you have Ohio State, who, you know, he hasn't been able to get any games in yet, but there are still a lot of good, solid coaches, not even just talking about the team, but solid coaches. And Texanole is still be impressing people day in and day out with USC. I don't think Northwestern is going to be in the conversation at the end of the season. I mean, I think you're gonna be talking about, you know, the Oregons, the Penn States. You're gonna be talking about USC, Northwestern. I mean, Iowa. To me, I think Iowa's gonna jump back into the conversation before, at the end of the season, more so than Northwestern being relevant at the end of the season. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, Duquesne, I think you said it best. I mean, his opponents are 0-7. Nobody he's played has won a game yet. But, you know, I don't want to take away from a newcomer and what he's done. He's 3-0 in the Big Ten. He's playing good football. I got to say, when I look at his schedule, he doesn't have three out of the four teams that I think I've circled in the Big Ten is coming out, you know, as the favorites, which is Oregon, USC, Ohio State, and Penn State. He does have Ohio State on his schedule. No offense to you, Freak. I think you're talented as well, and I see you on his schedule as well. But you know, looking at some of the games that I've got circled for him at Indiana, next block, that'll be one that we're going to really find out. Is he ready to play in the Big Ten, and is he a real deal, or maybe is he gotten out to an early one? And you know, every other week after that, he's got some tough games. As D. Kane said, I got USC and Oregon circled as my top two there. But this would be my time to take a plug at Beer, Bourbon, and Ball tonight, 7:30 kickoff. That's Pacific Standard Time. We've got USC and Michigan playing. We'll be live calling the game. We'd love for you guys to come out, check it out. Freak versus Texas Noll.
Thank you for that. I think from what I've seen, it looks like he's going to be definitely a competitor in the Big. Will he be up there come the end of the season? I don't think so, but hey, he's only played one Big Ten game just yet. I'm sorry, just as of right now, he's only played one Big Ten game. So we'll see what the rest of the season has. There's still eight more games he played, maybe nine. I forgot if he had a bye week or not. But I'm looking forward to seeing what happens in the Big. I think I can make some noise tonight by finally maybe getting a win for once, but it's going to be very interesting. I have to face USC. You still got Ohio State, Oregon always on top. Penn State is always a sleeper to make it to the Big Ten championship game and maybe even into the CFP if Nidler can get there. You got Wisconsin, and Nebraska is always a favorite to get there as well. Very good owner there too. So, I mean, the Big's always up for grabs.
Yeah, and it'll be exciting this weekend on game day. Coach Tutty Roosevelt has decided to join us as a guest. So he'll be a guest speaker, and we'll also be able to have a little Q&A. So we'll kind of ask him about this season and what his expectations are. Next, we'll move over to Joker for this one, the SEC talk. When will Coach MJ Kemp lose? When do you think they'll experience their first loss? Do you think that Nate Noll keeps up his 250 rushing yards a game? And then can Smitty break the Ole Miss curse in the NDL?
Yeah, so this question got me taking a little deep dive into it. And obviously, I looked at Missouri's schedule. Missouri's incredible offense so far. You know, I got to say, just to answer the question, if he's going to lose, it's going to be one in the next four games. I know that's a wide variety, but I do think that if he can get out of the next four games and get past Alabama at home, I think he runs the table in the SEC, which would be pretty incredible. And got me thinking. So I started looking at he doesn't play Texas, he doesn't play LSU, he doesn't play Duquesne at Georgia, and I took a look at Texas and LSU, and they don't play each other as well, and so. Started thinking about the SEC and the talent there, and DK, and hopefully you can stop one of these two. But if not, and Texas and LSU run the table, that means we would have three undefeated teams in the SEC that don't play each other, which would be incredible. You know, chances are that doesn't happen. But if it did happen, it got me thinking, like, well, how do you pick who goes to the SEC championship? And so there's five things. It's head-to-head, record versus common opponent, record against highest-placed common opponent, combined conference winning percentage, and then after that, it's average total scoring margin, which would be interesting because that puts these games, every game, you scoring a lot of points is going to matter. And then if it's still tied after that, it would be just a random draw. So I'm not sure if I answered your question, but I did maybe bring another question. Is there a chance that we'll have three undefeated teams in the SEC if Missouri doesn't lose?
I'm going to say no. I don't think we're going to have three undefeated teams in the SEC. What I will say is I believe NJ Kemp is going to meet his test with Texas A&M this upcoming block. 6 feet is a great coach. He's able to stop the run. He's definitely a great on offense too. So that's going to be a hell of a game and should be a game of the week, hopefully, if the powers that be say so. In regards to Nate Noel, I don't believe he's going to be able to keep up the 250 yards rushing per game. It's very impressive that he's been able to put up that through four games so far this season, but I don't think he can keep that up, especially as SEC play comes. He has Texas A&M and Alabama. Other than that, there may be some other coaches that might be able to give up 200 to 300 yards rushing, but in SEC play, it's very hard to see that much happening. Lastly, can Smitty break the curse? 100%. I think he'll be able to. He's in the talks for the top of the SEC, along with DeKane, Jiggy, and Bucknut. So we'll see where they all land, but Smitty's definitely going to have a plus 500 season. DeKane?
All right, so I actually had the pleasure of scrimming Missouri, and I'm going to tell you right now, this is nothing against the coach. The team itself, their speed is not going to be able to keep up with the speed of the defense of Bama, for sure. Texas A&M, in the way that that Six likes to scheme his defense, is going to prove pretty challenging as well. When you look at these first four games, you got Western Michigan, Appalachian State, Georgia Tech, Vanderbilt, a lot of underrated defenses that aren't really strong against stopping the run. And that's not to take away from the coaches. It's just the personnel on the field just weren't able to do it. And you're about to switch gears into teams who have players who are fit for those purposes. You got that monster DN at Texas A&M. Auburn has some great D linemen and a couple, I think one or two good linebackers. In Alabama, we don't even need to get started on that defense over there. So, yeah, I do think that you're going to see the rushing numbers dwindle quite a bit in the next few games coming up here. And as far as the Missouri at the end of the season, no. Honestly, it's going to be my take, and this is only because I never put any shine on myself. I consider myself decent. I think it's going to be Texas and LSU at the end of the season in the SEC championship. Not to take anything from D. Kennedy away, it's just that Texas's defensive line and Texas's overall speed is probably the second best in the SEC. The D-line is the best in the SEC, in my opinion. But as far as the speed, I think they're the second best speed-wise. Because Georgia's my team, but I'm sorry, that team is, like, just blessed with speed everywhere. Like, literally, I don't care what position it is. The freaking center is fast, okay? It's ridiculous. But Texas, they have speed in all the right places. And Jiggy is a offensive monster, trying to stop what he puts together, because he will put something together and then he makes adjustments on the fly so quick it's ridiculous. So him and LSU, I think, are going to be at the end, even though I don't know, because with us having a new playmaker rule in effect, I don't know if you know what, let me stop. Yeah, Smitty. We'll talk about that when we get to the disheartening games we lost. We'll talk about that then. Smitty breaking the curse. I told Smitty when we were scrimming, when he was trying teams out, because he asked me then if I thought he would do well with Ole Miss, and I told him that I think he would be the first person that I would ever see do well with Ole Miss. Even though he did mention in one of the podcasts that, I haven't beat him in a scrimmage. always told him that I don't play scrims to win. I'm practicing my playbooks. But, you know, nobody actually pays attention to that. But anyways, yes, I think Smitty will break that curse. He's going to surprise and shock a lot of people. If he can make it past a couple games, I wouldn't be surprised to have his name at the end of the, season in the SEC championship, to be honest.
I think
the you know, you bounce, you, I was going to say, you bounce through some of these schedules in the SEC, they're all pretty out, you know, tough schedules. But for some reason, when you look at that Missouri schedule, you know, I'm not picking on any of those teams on there. It's just, there's not as many ranked teams. There's not as many challenging games. It's just one of those ones where it's pretty surprising to see the schedule that he was, you know, able to get.
That Missouri schedule looks like a fat kid loving some cake, bro.
That's why some of these teams are taken, though, with the permanent schedule locked in for the game. That's why some of these teams are taking those, because these coaches know they get to avoid certain teams and certain coaches. And does give them a little bit clearer path to that conference championship and maybe even a college football playoff. We're going to go on to the next. We're going to skip a question here time-wise. We're going to go on to the last question here. Sam Houston State had Iowa State on the ropes last night, but was stopped on the one-yard line in the final play of overtime. When was your last heartbreak loss, and how did you take it?
For me, I think I would have to go back to season 29. I've had a few losses, we all know that, but I'd have to go back to season 29 with the one loss that not only hurt then and now, being stopped at the 6-yard line, right, trying for the win, at the end of regulation. It was 28-24 Illinois. And if I would have won that game against Illinois, I would have been in the conference championship in order to probably get my ass whooped. But in the conference championship at 11-1. But unfortunately, ended up losing that heartbreaker. And how did I take it? I went back, looked at the tape, tried to see what I had done wrong. But it was great coaching altogether.
Block says to you, Freak, that you had a lot of Michigan losses to choose from.
You know what? You're right. How about this? Let me go back. Let me rephrase this. That's one of them. The other one I'll say is Ohio State last season. Jumped up to a 14-0 lead. Had probably one of the greatest defensive games of the year. And Dan ended up coming back and winning in the very end. So thanks, Block. There'll be many more, but you're not getting your team. I'm keeping Michigan.
What about you, Deacane?
Well, I kind of already touched on it, so I'm just going to go ahead and just finish up. Mine would have been the last season's SEC championship game. I was up in that game, and every third down, third and long, big conversion was off of a sideline playmaker play. I kid you not. I went back and watched it, and I was just like, man, like, what do you do? How can you stop that? Because when you're on the guy, it's like your defender does not react when he breaks up off the field. So it's like, it was like, yeah, kind of burning me in the butt a little bit. So yeah, that was probably the sore loss, the only sore loss. Because any other game that I lost, it was like really good tight games, and it was like, hey, it could have went either way. And that one, I do believe I lost in overtime. So yeah, that one would probably be the sorest. It wasn't anything like being out play called or anything. It was just that one thing that I couldn't stop, because there's no way to stop.
What about you, Joker?
I'm going to say last year in the Conference USA Championship against Middle Tennessee State, I lost 27-14, gave up one touchdown, threw two pick sixes, beat myself, and wasn't able to take down that Conference USA Championship. So that would be it for me.
Yeah, that would have sealed off that undefeated season too.
Yep. Yep. And my response was, I think I direct messaged Patty and just said, I shat the bed. And he said, you sure did. He really did.
And I mean, was that your deciding factor for leaving? Cause you've obviously already told us, that was like one of your biggest regrets of this season already was leaving.
Yeah, I wish I would have stayed with them, but I'm also liking, you know, I'm learning to like South Florida a little bit. And like for me, it was just getting in a conference that had active coaches. That was one of the things last year that drove me a little nuts with the conference USA was trying to get games in. So happy to have a full conference and we can get our live chat going a little bit more.
Yeah, this NDL game day chat's going off about SEC and Ole Miss.
I like it. It's a Thursday.
What about you, man?
Man, mine? What? Oh, man, I don't know. It's tough to go back in time. I've never really been that good. I put together a couple decent seasons. I had Texas way back in the day and put together a pretty good season with them, but I don't remember my loss in that season. I couldn't tell you who I lost to. And like the most recent would probably be, that's the thing. But like Pat said in there, most of my losses are blowouts. Last season, losing to my nephew was big because, just losing to him and obviously bringing him into the league and he's younger and stuff and losing to him was a big one. Obviously, I was able to beat him again this year, but that was probably the biggest one. I lost to Outlaw, too. Two games that were both close and I lost last year. Man, I don't know. That's probably it, losing to a family member in the league.
I mean, how do you think Randolph feels?
Yeah, right. I don't know. Has he ever beat his son?
Supposedly that series is 1-2 or 2-1. I think him over his son his son over him.
Huh.
What is the family dynamic right now, Tim, with that whooping that you put on Marshall the other night?
It was okay. It was funny because right after the game, I texted his mom and told him to check on him, you know, and he was okay. He's playing Fortnite with me and the boys the next day, so it couldn't have been too bad.
Just wait till you go over his house next time. He's got something planned for you. Don't worry.
I know. So it'll be interesting because the game we go to the Bahamas together, and he's coming with us, and that's in July. Like the 22nd or whatever. And so I don't know that the game will be out before then because it'd be fun to try to get that game in before we go to the Bahamas so that I could really rub it in. But yeah, well, I don't have anything else. Anybody else have anything else?
Hold on. It says if Randolph was smart, he threatened his son with being grounded pending the result, giving him a slight edge. Sammy, you dumb.
That's just not proper parenting. We're setting that kid up for failure. We'll be blackmailing people at his workplace when he gets older.
Right, that was a big conspiracy.
Hey, Tim, really appreciate it today.
Yeah, no problem, man. Anytime. I love the PTD in the middle of the day. Get a bunch of listeners some material and stuff. We'll get this audio file uploaded to Spotify soon. Hey, DK, do you play Ole Miss and Smitty?
Yes, I do. I play pretty much everybody. I play Jiggy. I play Smitty. I play D. Kennedy. I play Vegas. I play Big Mike. Like, people don't know my schedule is, like, horrendous.
Yo, man, so, Tim, his schedule is he got Bama week 5, Auburn week 6, Mississippi State 7, you got Jiggy 8, Mike 10, Smitty 11. God damn. 8-12, Jiggy, Mike, Smitty, Vegas, all in a row.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sammy's predicting a 20-point win for you.
Bro, I'm going to have Xanax on deck, that whole little section right there for that good month.
By the way, DeCane, how do you feel about your OOC scheduling this season? Yes, you whooped my ass, but how do you feel about it?
I personally have been trying to play rain since season 29. Like, we're supposed to have our little thing, and we haven't been able to do that yet. So when he said that, I was really excited. And I don't shy away from big name schools. So when you sent one, I was like, okay, cool. Like, the only thing for me is like, I look at what I need to do with my team and what I want to do for the season. And right now, I just want to prove that I can play. I mean, in all honesty, I'm not even going to lie. I'm going to just sour everybody's pussies real quick. All I need is like 7 or 8 wins this season, and I can still keep Georgia. But anyways, I'm not even going for that. It's like, I just want to be able to play these guys. Like, I've never been able to play Jiggy. So this season, I'm excited that I just get to play him. I don't care what the results are. I just get to play a guy who's really, really good. Those games actually excite me because it gives me a chance to, you know, test and see where I'm at, you know?
100%. Why do you think I put random teams on my schedule for the hell of it? I suck. I just want to lose to the best people.
Notice you didn't schedule me, asshole.
Oh, wow.
Oh, next season.
I think the last time Michigan and Washington State played was the Rose Bowl. I'm sure they played after that, but
maybe it's got to happen again at the Rose Bowl.
Well, Jim, we got a Rose Bowl game tonight.
Yeah, we do. USC, Michigan. You got the Bourbon Brothers. They'll all be on the show broadcasting the game live. So don't forget to check in, visit with them. Live chat will be popping. I will. Yeah, I don't have anything else, gentlemen. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you, man. Yo.